and she saw his face for the first time, saw his fear and agony, saw the life in his eyes go out like a candle. Then his weight carried him over the side, and the knife was too deep for her to pull out before he twisted away, taking it with him. Chapter 57. Alex knew something was wrong the minute he saw the dying fire. It smoldered near the shore, a half-made spit and a dead squirrel lying next to it. The squirrel had been killed by a stone from a sling. All signs Sage and Nicholas had been there, but they'd dropped everything and abandoned the camp. He followed running footprints back to the shore, where the bottom of the boat had left grooves in the sand. No signs of anyone in the area around them. Across the river, Cass waved his arms for attention.
"What do you see?" Alex called to him.
"Lots of men, moving fast over here, 2 to 3 hours ago," came the answer.
"Gather your team," he shouted back. "We're going after them."
Chapter 58. There was only one oar left, and Sage used it as a rudder, directing the boat into the swiftest currents. Nicholas gripped the bow with white knuckles as he looked ahead to warn her about rocks. They'd hit one waterfall before entering the Beskan Gorge, but it was only about 5 feet high, thanks to the rain-swollen pool at the bottom, and they managed not to capsize, though they were nearly soaked. Every once in a while, Nicholas glanced over his shoulder at Sage, like he didn't recognize her. At first, she thought it was shock. Likely he'd never seen a man die before. The man on the boat had been the second man she'd killed. Third, if the archer she hit was dead. But the first she'd really experienced. The first had been last year, in a desperate struggle for survival, while she was on the point of blacking out. She did black out, and he'd bled to death while she was unconscious. Alex had once confessed he was terrified all the lives he'd taken in battle had made him a monster. She'd assumed he was nothing of the kind, but as she recognized the look on the prince's face, she truly understood Alex's fear. Nicholas was scared. Of her. He looked at Sage like she was a monster. Perhaps she was. She and Nicholas were safe in the canyon for now. High rock walls protected them from attack, but offered no shelter. They would need to eat eventually, too. Sage saw lizards and a few decent-sized rodents, but she didn't dare stop. If their pursuers were smart, they'd try to catch her and Nicholas when they emerged on the far end. Their only chance of getting away from the Khimasar was to stay ahead. But beyond Beskan lay the impassable Yanli Gorge. She and Nicholas would have to leave the river at some point, and when they did, they would be in Kasman. The question was, how deep into Kasman the Khimasar were willing to follow them. As the sun slipped outside the canyon's rim above, Sage made a decision. They would steer to the shore as soon as possible, and forage for a few minutes before continuing downriver. As long as there was enough light to see, they'd stay on the water. But when they did stop, lighting a fire would be too risky. It would be a cold night. Sage shivered in her damp clothes as they continued through the shaded canyon, praying they'd reach the south end before sunset. Chapter 59. Alex's lungs burned, and his legs begged for respite, but he would not stop. Every step was one step closer to her, to Nicholas. They found a place where the river plunged several feet, but there was no sign the boat had been wrecked. As the sun sank lower in the sky, Alex and his Norsari reached the entrance to the Beskan Gorge. The sides of the river rose high, the water rushing into the narrow opening between stone walls. He paused to check for signs Sage and Nicholas had stopped, even for a few minutes, but found none. Across the river, Cass and his team combed the opposite bank for similar signs.
He used hand signals to report over the river's roar, echoing out of the canyon.
Nothing.
Rest and drink water, Alex signaled back, and gave the same instruction to the men around him.
Cass waved to him again with a report.
One dead Kimisar several miles back, stone in head.
Alex grimly acknowledged the message. Sage and her sling. He deduced the Kimisar were following along, probably harassing Sage and Nicholas enough that they didn't feel safe stopping. But she'd nailed one of them. Good for her.
He looked into the gorge. Beskan would provide Sage and Nicholas several hours of safety from the Kimisar, but little chance to relax. Alex would kill for a boat of his own right now.
Sergeant Lance approached and offered some dried fruit and venison, left over from their ill-fated trip into the desert. Most of the Norsari's provisions had been lost in the fire.
Alex looked around at the dozen men who'd kept up with him over the last 5 hours. They looked tired, but determined. Good men, all of them. He'd never been so proud to be a commander.
Drink up and fill your canteens, he said. It's not over yet.
Chapter 60. Sage steered the boat to the right shore, where a tangle of trees extended south. When they'd exited the gorge, a blast of hot desert air hit them, which felt good after so many hours of shade and damp. But her anxiety shot up at how exposed they were. It was another hour before she felt secure enough to land. This area had promise. A fallen tree leaned out and created a natural eddy and a place out of sight from the other shore. She and Nicholas jumped out in shallow water and towed and pushed the boat onto the sandy pebbles. The first thing they did was find a place to relieve themselves. When they regrouped, Nicholas described a tree with some kind of fruit hanging from it, but it didn't sound like anything Sage recognized as safe. A bird's trill made her grab his arm. She wasn't sure the source was an animal. As if on cue, a man wearing a scarf wrapped around his head and loose tan clothing stepped out of the trees, leveling a bow and arrow at them. Sage swept Nicholas behind her and looked around. There had to be more. 6 additional men revealed themselves, holding various weapons. The leader of the group she identified immediately by the way everyone deferred to him. As she met his eyes, he swept his headscarf back, revealing the narrow white scar across the forehead of a familiar face. Sage raised her hands to show she wasn't armed.
Bazmedar, Deret Yamon.
Bazmedar, Seish Faller.
Deret smiled ironically.
Though from the look of you, I think your fortune has been bad, he said in Kazmuni.
We are agreed, she replied.
Eyebrows went up at her use of what was probably a formal and antiquated phrase. Deret said an unfamiliar word, and the men around him lowered their weapons. He addressed her again.
Is your bad fortune due to your help to us?
Sage shook her head.
Kimisar attacked us.
The Kazmuni leader didn't look as though he quite believed her.
It probably did seem awfully convenient.
She wasn't sure she had enough words to explain. One of his companions shouted and pointed at the river. A body had drifted into the eddy pool. Sage took a step toward it, and weapons went up. After a glance at Deret, she continued to the water's edge. Wading into the river, she grabbed the man by his arm and dragged his body onto the shore. She recognized the soldier even before she rolled him onto his back. The hilt of Alex's dagger still protruded from his throat, his face frozen in an expression of desperation. Bile rose in her throat at the memory of taking the man's life. Deret walked up behind her.
Your work?
He asked, pointing at the knife.
Yes, she said.
Sage pulled the dagger out and wiped it on the dead man's shirt, then tucked it back in its sheath on her belt and stood to face Deret.
More will come soon.
Deret gestured for his men to lower their weapons,
but noise from the west made them turn in that direction instead. Another Kazmuni man burst from the trees, shouting and pointing upriver. His meaning was plain. The Kimisar were coming. At Derrit's nod, two men left the ark around Sage and Nicholas and followed the man back into the forest, weapons in hand. Derrit stared at the dead Kimisar for a few seconds, then looked back to Sage, who had gone to stand by Nicholas again. He nodded, as though making a decision.
"Come with us," he said. "We will protect you."
"What is he saying?" Nicholas asked. "He's offering us protection. What do we do?"
She doubted the Kazmuni would force them, but the better choice was obvious. It would be several days before the Damorans found her and Nicholas, if they found them.
"We go with them," she said.
Chapter 61 Hazar's team lost precious time crossing the river, but their prey would be foolish to stop on the side they'd been attacked from. The Kimisar were famished, exhausted. He began to worry that if they caught the prince, they wouldn't be able to hold on to him. Hazar's only chance of getting home was slipping through his fingers like sand. Damn that woman. Not for the first time, he wondered what role she'd played at Tagan, other than killing Dirai, his black-tailed hawk. His last means of communicating with the men he'd been separated from last summer. Now she was back. Capable as Damoran squires were, the young prince would probably have faltered on his own eventually, but she drove his escape. If not for her, they'd have him, and Hazar wouldn't have left the bloody mess of his second-in-command behind. Shouts ahead. Had the Damorans gotten around them? Three of his men came running from the trees. They stopped and bent over, hands on knees, as they tried to catch their breath.
"Kazmuni!"
one finally managed to gasp.
"A half mile ahead," said another. "Attacked us!"
The third man fell to his knees, clutching a bloody hand to his thigh.
"Are they following you?" asked Hazar.
"No," said the first man. "They went back where they came from. There must be more."
Hazar's hands clenched into fists. To be so close to his goal, only to meet another obstacle.
"And the prince and his companion?"
"No sign we saw, Captain. And we lost Gispan."
Though he thought things could not get worse, Hazar was proved wrong by a yell from behind. Damorans had been sighted along the rim of the gorge. The only thing that offered mercy was the setting sun and the promise of another moonless night. Failed. Hazar had failed. He looked up into the eyes of the men who awaited his command.
"We must withdraw. Let the Damorans deal with the Kazmuni."
Chapter 62 Alex prodded the corpse with his foot. Dead about a day. The cause of death was obvious. His throat was ripped open, but the lack of blood told Alex it hadn't happened here. He crouched down and fingered the wound. It was a clean, narrow cut, made by a blade about the length of his handspan. Could have been any dagger, but Alex would have put money on one with a black and gold hilt. Cassick approached from behind. "The trail from that fight back there led into the desert. 3 to 4 men, at least one was wounded. From the blood, it was yesterday evening." Alex nodded as he pushed to his feet. They'd lost a lot of time last night. He hadn't wanted to stop, but he'd been near collapse from not having slept in over 2 days, and it became too dark to track anymore. The Norsari took shelter near several large boulders at the east end of the canyon, and slept for a few hours. As soon as the twilight was enough to see by, they were on the move again. 3 miles downriver, they came across bloody footprints and trampled foliage. Cass had taken a team to investigate, but Alex had continued along the river until he found the boat and the dead man. His friend barely glanced at the body. It had been dragged out of the water and was obviously incidental.
"So they stopped here.
Then what?
Alex pointed to an arc of heavy footprints in the sand.
They were surrounded.
He moved to where she'd faced them, standing between Nicholas and about 8 men. Sweet spirit, she was brave.
Then she and Nicholas went this way.
Alex followed her steps into the trees. Tracks in dry sand were difficult to interpret, but he was able to determine she wasn't running or stumbling. When her footprints and the others reached the edge of the vegetation, they narrowed into a single line leading southwest into the dunes. While the order of events was a little confusing, the conclusion was obvious. Sage and Nicholas had been found by Kazmuni and gone with them into the desert. They hadn't put up a fight, but he trusted her to have made the best decision at the time. As he watched, a strong wind swept across the sand, beginning the process of erasing the only clues he had to find her.
"What are your orders, Captain?"
said Kasich. Uncle Raymond would want Alex to go after Nicholas, but the Norsari with him had brought very little food along, thinking they'd be gone only a day. It would take at least 2 days to get provisions from the camp. Thanks to the fire, there might not even be enough to gather until Colonel Trasden arrived. With the prince now in the hands of the Kazmuni, Alex losing command was inevitable. But it was nothing compared to losing her. Somehow, that gave him a tremendous sense of freedom.
"You're going back," Alex said finally. "Inform Colonel Trasden of everything that's happened, and turn command of the Norsari over to him."
"What about you?"
"I'm going after them."
Alex pivoted to address the Norsari, gathering behind them.
"I need all the canteens, every scrap of food you men have, and 2 volunteers."
Chapter 63. Darrett led them through the sand well into twilight, before stopping in a copse of trees surrounding a spring of clear water. The sun was high overhead when Sage woke the next morning, though she lay in the shade. Nicholas was sprawled on the sand nearby, still asleep. She groaned and stretched, noticing the smell of cooking drifting across the pool. Malamin sat by the fire, stirring a pot that was the source of the delicious scent. He smiled at her and touched his forehead with his fingers in greeting, and she returned the gesture. Sage tossed the blanket aside and headed for the spring to wash her hands and face, then rinsed sleep and desert grit from her mouth. Her stomach begged for food, but she made herself drink first. When she stood, Malamin held up a small bowl, and she tripped over her own feet in her eagerness to accept it. The meat in the stew appeared to be from some kind of bird, almost chicken-like in taste, and the grain swimming in the broth resembled barley. She drank it down, pausing only to accept a spoon. Nothing had ever tasted so delicious. As soon as she finished, her bowl was refilled, and she picked out a piece of the meat. "What this?" she asked.
"Vargen,"
he answered, producing a flat board on which a leathery skin was drying. Malamin smiled at her surprised expression. In all their years of living outdoors, Father had never suggested eating snakes. Sage shrugged and raised the bowl in salute before digging in again. First time for everything. She finished her second helping much slower and forced herself not to ask for more. Her stomach was already protesting after being empty for so long. Darrett and several others returned, carrying a few desert hares. Nicholas sat up and looked around like he was trying to remember where he was. The Kazmuni tossed the rabbits to Malamin, who pulled out a knife and started skinning, then went to the pool to drink and refilled their water skins. Darrett approached her and touched his fingers to his forehead, as Malamin had, and offered her a hand up.
"Sish,"
he said solemnly. "Darrett," she said, putting her hand over her heart. "I wish thank you," she said in Kazmuni, "for our safe." He smiled at her awkward speech.
"I am well thanked. Please come with me now."
Taking hold of her arm, he gently pulled her in the direction he'd come from. Nicholas made to follow, but she shook her head. The Kazmuni brought her to the edge of the trees, where two of his men stood on either side of a third man, on his knees. At Derrett's nod, the bound man's gag was loosened. The man dressed and looked like a Demoran, but from the hate in his blue-gray eyes, she knew he was Kimisar. His clothes were wet with the blood of a wound in his side, and her hand unconsciously went to the knife on her belt. "Why did you attack us? Why did you pursue us?" she demanded in her own language. "I am only returning the favor," he answered. "One enemy to another." He spoke to Morin. Very well, too. She gripped the handle of her dagger. "Why were you in Demora?" He sneered. "We came on invitation. We remained because of betrayal."
"Is Kimisara planning an invasion?"
"How would I know? I've not been home in over a year." Sage blinked.
"You've been here."
She remembered here was not actually Demora anymore, but continued.
"Since last year? Why?"
The man snorted. "Do you think your king would let us leave?"
"Why did you attack the Norsari camp?"
The man turned his eyes away.
"Answer me."
"I will not." He looked back to her. "I am loyal to my captain." The vision of Alex tumbling backward off his horse flashed in her mind. Sage didn't even realize she had her knife out and was reaching for the man's throat, until Derrett caught her from behind and pulled her arms back, lifting her off her feet. She screeched and fought him, as the other two men yanked the Kimisar away from her. The weapon was stripped from her fingers, but Sage twisted out of Derrett's hold and lunged for the prisoner again. Before she got two steps, Derrett swept his leg out and knocked her off her feet. Within seconds, he had her pinned to the ground.
"Stop!" Derrett shouted in her ear. "You must stop!"
"Get off of her!" Nicholas tackled Derrett from the side, but the Kazmuni didn't let her go, and they rolled and tumbled together in a tangle of arms and legs. By the time they were pulled apart, Sage had a bloody lip, and Nicholas's tunic was ripped completely open. She sat sullenly, glaring at the Kimisar man, who was lying on his side several yards away, looking shaken. The prince clutched his bound wrist.
"Are you all right?"
he asked Sage.
"Yes, fine."
She licked sand out of the gash on her lip and spat.
"You?"
"If my wrist wasn't broken before, I think it is now." Sage looked up as Derrett stood over her, offering her a waterskin. She accepted it and rinsed out her mouth while he knelt beside Nicholas to examine his arm.
"It is not well to let words affect you so much, Seish Faller,"
Derrett lectured her over his shoulder.
"I promise you his threats will come to nothing."
Sage sipped water.
"He made no threat," she said.
Derrett glanced at her.
"Then you deserve your injury. Only children respond to taunts."
His expression lightened a little as he turned back to Nicholas.
"But you may tell Nicholas he did well in coming to your aid."
After rebinding the prince's wrist with a splint of stiff palm leaves, Derrett offered Sage her knife. Alex's knife. She put it back on her belt, resisting the urge to trace her fingers over the initials.
"You do not fear I will harm the man?" she asked.
Derrett shrugged.
"I think if you want to kill him, you will not be stopped by lack of a weapon."
Chapter 64. Sergeant Miller and Private Wolf were his volunteers. Both men had been in the desert with Alex the first time, for which he was glad. They already knew how to walk in the sand and conserve water. They'd left camp without headscarves or tents, so they improvised by wrapping their heads in undershirts donated by some of the men who'd returned with cassock. As for tents, they did without, but luckily, they found a small spring with a handful of short trees on the second day, and they were able to refill their canteens and take shelter during the hottest part of the day. The trees were a kind Alex had never seen, their leaves opened like paper fans, to be larger than an archery target. Alec stripped several dead leaves down to their thick, arm-length stems to use for fuel. The Demorans walked through the night, but when they did stop to rest, it was damn cold, and the fire was welcome. Their luck ran out on the third day. He and the two other soldiers had spread out to where they could see each other well enough to communicate if they saw something nestled in the dunes between them. As a consequence, Alex couldn't be sure when exactly Sergeant Miller disappeared, but it was a full hour after noticing Miller was gone that he and Private Wolf established that he'd vanished without a trace. Wolf claimed to have heard what sounded like a scream. At the time, he'd thought it was one of the desert hawks they occasionally saw. Sage would have known the difference. After their fruitless search, Alex and Wolf spread apart again, though not as far as before. Not that it mattered. It was nearly sunset when Wolf shouted for attention. Alex ran at him, calling for him to wait. But Wolf wasn't moving, as Alex had initially thought. He was sinking into the sand. While still 50 yards away, Alex's boots sank over his knees within 2 steps. Alex crawled his way back in the direction he'd come, as Wolf's cries became weaker and weaker. By the time Alex was on solid enough ground to stand and turn back around, Private Wolf was gone, swallowed by the sand. For a long time, Alex sat there, terrified to move, hoping against hope that Wolf would emerge, clawing his way out, or that Miller would appear over a nearby dune, having only been lost. He wasn't much for praying, but he prayed then, asking the spirit to pass on to them how sorry he was for leading them to their deaths. Losses in battle were easy to bear in comparison. Those lives were currency spent to achieve an objective. These were like being robbed. The right thing to have done would have been to have waited, waited for supplies, waited for permission, waited for more information. He deserved to lose his command, but given the chance, he'd have done everything the same, though he would have done it alone. Eventually, Alex continued southwest, the only direction he knew to go in, worrying every step would be his last. Sergeant Miller had been carrying their one water sling, and Alex was down to one empty and one partially full canteen. When night came, he hunkered down between dunes for a few hours and lit a fire. With nothing left to burn, he resorted to tearing the leather-bound cover and a few blank pages from Sage's ledger. He should have rested, but instead, Alex read and reread the letter she'd kept. She must have turned to it dozens of times in the last weeks for reassurance that he loved her. He would never give her a reason to doubt him again. The heat of the fourth day brought hallucinations. Sometimes he thought Miller and Wolf were walking next to him. Other times it was Sage. In both cases, he wanted to cry and beg their forgiveness, but his eyes were too dry to make tears. Twice, he thought he saw a spring like the first one, but neither was real. Alex stumbled from hill to hill, each time telling himself he would go just one more. His head throbbed with every step, and he began staying along the ridges of the dunes to prevent the cramps that seized his feet when he walked downhill. At some point, he started hoping the sand would swallow him, too. The sun sat low and red in the sky when the black tops of trees appeared, silhouetted against the horizon. In a corner of his mind, he knew it wasn't real, but the part that kept him walking believed it. If he pulled the makeshift scarf off his face, he could smell the greenery. He didn't need his jacket either. Alex left them both in the sand behind him. His legs were cramping. If he removed his boots, he'd be able to walk better. The sand was pleasantly warm under his feet. The sword belt was slowing him down too, and he struggled to undo the buckle with fingers that didn't want to bend. His trembling legs suddenly gave out, and he fell, first to his knees, and then forward onto his face.
Alex tried to push himself up, but his arms shook so violently, he barely rose enough to turn his head out of the sand to breathe. He felt he was sliding down the side of a dune, though nothing around him changed. Sliding into sleep. That's what it was. He hadn't slept in so long. Alex closed his eyes and let the darkness take him. Chapter 65. Derrett's group traveled outside the heat of the day for the most part, and Sage's sense of direction told her they didn't take a straight path. The hours of walking in sand were brutal, but she was strangely grateful for the concentration required for each step. It kept her from thinking about Alex. When they stopped to rest, she was so tired she dropped instantly to sleep, but it never lasted. Bad dreams always woke her after only a few hours, and then she couldn't stop the thoughts and memories. Sage would pull her legs in tight to her body and rock back and forth as wave after wave of grief swept over her. She never cried, though, just as she hadn't when Father died. Late in the second day, Derrett stopped for several minutes and frowned over the dunes, which had settled into smaller hills in the last hour. All the Kazmuni shifted nervously as they waited. At last, Derrett shook his head and unfastened a long rope from his shoulder and handed it down the line. Everyone took a position on it with their left arm entwined, except the Kimisar, who grasped it with both bound hands, and Sage and Nicholas followed their example. After about a mile of walking, Malamin, fourth in line, took a step and sank to his waist before anyone could react. At his cry, everyone turned and braced their feet as best they could in the shifting sand and pulled the rope taut. The man called Yosher unshouldered another rope and made it into a loop that was thrown around Malamin, who pulled it tight across his chest. With a quick, rhythmic count, the Kazmuni heaved Malamin from the sand trap and dragged him away. For a full minute, they lay flat, spreading their weight over as large an area as possible, gripping the rope, and watching the sand for signs of another collapse. At Derrett's direction, they pushed to their knees and crawled away. When he judged it safe, they stood and walked to a place they obviously felt wasn't as dangerous, though Sage couldn't see how it was any different from where Malamin had nearly disappeared. Nicholas's hands were still shaking. "That happened so fast," he whispered. Sage nodded, trying to work out how such a thing would be created. She handed the prince the waterskin Derrett had given them to share, and walked to Malamin. He looked as shaken as Nicholas as he removed his boots and dumped sand from them. She squatted next to him and picked up the boot he'd dropped, running her hand along the bottom. It felt cooler than she expected. Derrett stood over her as she rubbed sand from the sole between her fingers. It was damp. She cupped a bit in her hand and held it out for both men to see. "Drem," she said, using their word for water. Derrett nodded. "Water flows beneath the sand."
"Fascinating."
"How do you know where?" Sage asked him. Derrett wiped sweat from his brow before pointing to his nose and sniffing.
"I smell it."
He helped her to her feet and gestured for her to follow him. With his left hand wrapped in the rope, he led her back the way they'd come. Yosher held the other end of the rope as she grasped Derrett's free arm tightly. When he halted, he breathed deeply and indicated she should do the same. She smelled only sand and heat. Standing in a spot Derrett half expected to sink into the ground unnerved her. Sage closed her eyes and breathed again.
Moisture. It was barely there, but in the arid wind, she could distinguish it like a thread of blue woven into a length of red cloth.
Her eyes snapped open, and she found Derrett smiling a little. She waved at the area where Malamin had fallen.
"How is it called?"
"Dremshada. Water sand."
As she and Derrett made their way back to the group,
Sage sent a prayer to the spirit that no one from Demora would try to follow them. On the fourth day of walking, a brown spot appeared on the horizon around noon. When Derrett pointed it out, a small cheer went through the band, and instead of stopping, as before when the sun was high, the pace of travel picked up. As they drew closer, Sage noticed a regularity to what she'd first assumed was an outcrop of rock. It was, in fact, a group of tents clustered around an impressively large oasis. Though Sage admitted to herself, it was only the third she'd encountered, so her experience was limited. Sentries appeared and greeted Derrett and his men, with hands to foreheads, followed by clasping arms up to the shoulder. They cast curious looks at Sage, Nicholas, and the Kimisar prisoner, but asked for no explanation, and the group continued onward to the camp. She smelled horses, iron, and cooking as they approached. The dun-colored tents were sturdy against the almost constant wind, but nothing appeared permanent, not even the low growth of plants. Other than the horse paddock she caught a glimpse of between tents, there were no herd animals, leading her to conclude this wasn't a nomadic group, but a traveling camp, probably military in nature, if the heavy presence of weapons was any indicator. What Alex wouldn't give to see all this? No, Alex would never see anything again. Suddenly, Sage couldn't breathe. Derrett paused to look at Sage where she'd stopped.
"Are you well, Sage?" he said. "You need not fear."
Nicholas, too, wore concern on his face. Sage took a deep breath and continued walking.
"I am well," was all she said.
Derrett took them to what appeared to be an equal in rank, judging by their greeting. They spoke rapidly, and though Sage had believed her Kazmuni to have improved quite a bit in the last few days, she was instantly lost. One word Derrett threw in her direction caught her attention. Philemy. Friend. The man sent another off with a verbal message and called forth several more to take care of the prisoner. When his eyes settled on Sage, she tensed, but he only nodded and turned back to Derrett and resumed their conversation. She felt like she was deliberately left out, yet there was a polite air to her exclusion. When the messenger returned a few minutes later, Derrett looked at her thoughtfully.
"I will take you to wash and find some clean clothes," he said, speaking in a slow manner for her benefit. "Please, follow me."
He led them to a tent with an open side. The men they'd traveled with were in its shade, scrubbing themselves at large basins of steaming water. Derrett raised his arm to indicate Sage and Nicholas should join them. The prince didn't hesitate, but Sage stayed where she was.
"With that man, you called me your friend."
"Of course I did."
Derrett looked at her in confusion.
"You have not shared water yet."
Apparently there was more to the ritual than she'd realized. Her lack of knowledge now could get her into trouble.
"I understand this not. Please tell me like I am a child," she said.
"We do not speak or use names until water is shared. I thought you knew this."
Thank the spirit she'd shared water before trying to introduce herself the first time.
"Then, you called me your friend?"
"Out of custom,"
Derrett smiled.
"But if you are asking if we are friends, I think yes."
His words comforted her more than anything else he'd done over the last 4 days.
"Am I permitted to share water with others?" she asked.
Maybe there was a message in that she hadn't yet. Derrett nodded.
"Yes, but first you must share with Palandret. After you are presentable, you will dine with him."
Sage was about to ask who that was when her mind separated the name into two words. Palandret. My king.
Chapter 66.
Kazmuni clothes were as comfortable as they looked. She moved easily in the loose garments, and they kept her skin cool while absorbing sweat. Sage wore her own boots, though, and fastened her belt and knife around her waist. The left side felt unbalanced without her second dagger. She assumed Derrett still had it, but she'd been afraid to ask for it back. At sunset, Derrett led them to the massive tent at the center of the camp. Sage pulled Nicholas to her as they followed Derrett past two guards standing outside the curtain that acted like a door. Inside, the air was cooler and brighter than she expected, thanks to several horizontal vents in the peaked ceiling. The noise level dropped as well, absorbed by ornate tapestries hanging vertically around the outer walls, creating a sanctuary from the bustle outside. A low table had been laid out with quality but light and practical plates and flatware. Sage wasn't sure what she'd expected, but it was something more exotic than the standard forks and spoons she was used to. It was almost disappointing. From the scents wafting from the covered dishes, however, the food was less likely to be so. Derrett halted about 10 feet from a kneeling man, who didn't appear to react to their presence, giving Sage time to study his profile by the light of the low lamp beside him. His skin was sun-bronzed, like most Kesmuni, but while the hair color she'd observed ranged in shades of cedar, the king's wavy hair and close-clipped beard were nearly black as ebony. A long embroidered coat was tucked behind him, which differed from the loose breeches and jacket tunic she'd come to think of as Kesmuni styled. On his left side, a curved sword peeked out from the coat. Calloused hands rested lightly on his thighs as he sat in the center of a worn indigo carpet, with his eyes closed. After several seconds, the king, for she assumed that's who he was, opened his eyes but did not look at them.
"I hear my friend has brought guests," he said.
"Da, Palandrit," answered Derrett, bowing low.
Without further acknowledgement, the king stood and stepped off the carpet, then bent over and picked it up. Gold stars had been woven into the rug's faded blue-violet background, giving it the appearance of the night sky. He hung it on a pair of hooks with care, like it was precious to him, and at last turned to face them. He wore no crown or symbol of royalty she could see, other than perhaps the gold-embellished belt and the jeweled hilt of his sword. The long jacket hung to his knees, but he matched Lieutenant Kasich in height, though not in thinness of build. In the light, his eyes were a deep shade of green, reminding Sage of dried seaweed. With purposeful strides, the king came to stand just beyond arm's length of them. Sage tried not to fidget, and hoped Derrett hadn't omitted anything in his instructions. The king studied her with an expression of dismay.
"Has my friend brought me a pair of Wendasam?" he asked.
Sage had no idea what Wendasam were, but it didn't sound good.
"They are but boys."
Derrett's mouth twisted up in what Sage had come to know as his ironic smile.
"If my king would speak to them, he would see they are anything but."
The king raised his eyebrows and looked back to Sage and Nicholas. As Derrett had bowed the first time he spoke, Sage crossed her arms over her chest and lowered her head. Nicholas followed her lead.
"Bas Medari," she said,
choosing to go with the older, more formal greeting. His expression was even more surprised when she looked back up.
"They speak Kesmuni?"
4 days among the desert men had improved her grammar, pronunciation, and vocabulary, and she understood much more than she could speak, but that wasn't enough.
"Very little," she answered.
"My friend is modest," said Derrett,
and Sage blushed that he'd called her his friend more than from the compliment. The king's eyes had never left hers.
"And a woman?"
He now looked her up and down. Sage ground her teeth a little and reminded herself the Kesmuni did not think it polite to speak directly to someone they hadn't shared water with. As if also remembering this, the king gestured to his left and a servant appeared, holding a silver tray with a chalice and pitcher. He calmly took the cup and poured water into it, then looked her straight in the eyes as he took a long drink before extending it to her.
Sage took a trembling step forward and accepted the chalice without breaking eye contact. Darrett had described most sharings as casual, but when one met a king for the first time, all formality was observed. The Kazmuni king didn't reach for the cup when she was finished, which Darrett had told her meant she was to hand it to Nicholas. It also meant the prince wouldn't be addressed except through her. But she was glad to have them assume she was of higher rank. Nicholas took his sip and handed it back to Sage, and she offered it back to the king. The king replaced the chalice on the tray and extended his hands to her, palms down.
"You are welcome in my tent," he said formally. "I am Baneth, the seventh of that name."
Sage warily reached out, placing her fingers under his, and he grasped them gently.
"I am well welcomed," she said awkwardly, hoping that would work. "I am called Sage Fowler."
The king struggled to say her name as Darrett had, then gave up and released her hands.
"I am sorry I cannot say it correctly."
"It is nothing."
She extended an arm to the prince.
"This is Nicholas Broadmoor," she said, giving him her uncle's surname.
Baneth clasped one of the prince's hands briefly and stepped back. "Now what?" Nicholas's stomach roared audibly, and the king smiled.
"Yes, I think we should eat."
Chapter 67.
The table could have seated six, but there were only the four of them. Sage was invited to sit at Baneth's left hand, with Nicholas beside her, and Darrett on the king's right. The two men were casual and comfortable with each other. It was obvious they were close friends, and she was gladder than ever she'd helped Darrett and Malamin escape. Darrett gave an account of his mission, though Sage only understood sporadic words. His report sounded very thorough, and Baneth ate and asked questions, casting occasional looks at Sage and Nicholas.
"Sish gave me this," said Darrett, now speaking slowly for her benefit.
He pulled out her dagger and offered it to Baneth.
"As a sign of friendship, and to aid in our escape."
The king accepted the knife and unwound the leather strips on the hilt. She'd used the ones on Alex's knife to bind Nicholas's wrist, so now it was obvious the daggers matched. Baneth ran his thumb over the golden SF.
"Sish Fowler," he said, pairing her name with the letters.
There was room for a cue, but it would never be there now. The food in her mouth suddenly tasted like ashes.
"I do not think she knows what it meant," Darrett said.
Sage's eyes flicked back and forth between the two men. What unknown custom had she breached? Baneth looked amused.
"I assume you will not accept," he said.
Darrett chuckled.
"No."
The king turned to Sage, suppressing a smile that reached his eyes nonetheless.
"Giving one a weapon means you are friends."
He held up the dagger.
"Giving a gift with your name on it like this proposes marriage."
Sage choked, spitting crumbs all over her plate. Nicholas pounded her on the back until her coughing subsided. When she could finally breathe, she drank all the water in her cup to avoid looking at Darrett or the king. Baneth handed the dagger back to her.
"Don't ask," she said in response to Nicholas's confused look.
Face flaming, Sage jammed the weapon on her belt.
"I have much to learn about Kazmun."
"As I have much to learn about Demora," Baneth replied.
He paused thoughtfully.
"Are you familiar with any other tongues?"
he asked in Kimisar. Before she could debate how to respond, Nicholas's head jerked up, his eyes wide, giving himself away. Sage took another slow sip of water from the cup Darrett had refilled.
"Yes, I am," she said in Kimisar.
"I take it no one asked," said Baneth,
with a glance to Darrett, who looked shocked.
"And it was not something you wished to reveal."
"I chose to leave it unsaid," she answered.
"Wise as well as brave."
she felt herself blush again. I do not know all my friend here has told you about me, but I do not consider myself either wise or brave.
I assure you he said nothing bad.
Sage's mouth twisted up on one side. But not all of it was good. Baneth chuckled.
Good people are boring.
Yes, they are.
I'm sure you have many questions, said Baneth. Please ask. I will answer.
So I may return the favor? The king smiled wryly.
Of course.
Are we your prisoners? He shook his head.
No, you are my guests.
She wasn't quite ready to believe him. What do you plan to do with us?
That I have not decided, he said. I do not yet understand what your presence means.
She tensed a little.
But should you wish to leave, I will not stop you.
That meant little, considering the desert between her and home. I thank you for your hospitality.
May I ask questions now?
She nodded. Please, except first, how may I call you? Baneth thought for a moment.
Palandret is traditional, but I am not your king. Would that cause offense to say?
No, Palandret. Baneth nodded, then went straight to business.
Why were you in Kasmun?
The question no doubt referred to both times, but Sage decided to address only the second. We were running from a Khimasar attack. We escaped, but they pursued us, and we continued into Kasmun out of necessity.
You are the only survivors of the attack?
Sage flinched. No, most survived. Green eyes shifted to Nicholas.
Why do the Khimasar want your young friend?
Sage's stomach somersaulted. Somehow Baneth had figured out Nicholas was the valuable one. Her right hand drifted toward the hilt of one of her knives. Derek tensed.
My king, he whispered in Kasmuni. I have had to restrain her before.
The king seemed unafraid as he looked her straight in the eye.
If your friend is worth chasing, worth dying for, you understand my need to know his importance.
Thank the spirit Nicholas was silent. It allowed her to think. Sage combed through every interaction she'd had with Derrett. Nothing she said now could contradict what he'd seen. They wanted him for ransom, she said, starting with what she suspected was the truth. Baneth nodded.
But not you.
No.
You are not brother and sister then?
The king glanced at Derrett. Here was an out.
Apparently that was what Derrett had assumed.
She'd introduced the prince as having a different last name, however. Either they hadn't noticed, or she was being tested. It was highly unlikely the Kasmuni knew what her botanical name implied, or that they even knew Sage was a plant. But it gave her an idea. Different mothers, she said. He is the heir, but I am nothing.
I see.
Baneth seemed to understand she was saying she was illegitimate.
And what is he heir to?
Land, mostly. A roundabout truth. The king nodded again.
Why then, were you and Nicholas in the company of soldiers?
Sage should have anticipated that, but she'd not counted on being questioned in a language she could speak. She racked her brain for what Derrett had seen while a prisoner. What must he have learned or suspected about Alex and the mission into the desert? Alex. The thought of him hit her like a blow. Suddenly she could think of nothing else. I am learning to be a soldier, Nicholas said abruptly. Let me handle this, Nicholas, Sage snapped in Damoran. Her mind still felt like it was stuck in the mud, but the prince's words were like a rope she could grasp onto and pull herself out with. Sage snuck into my training to watch over me, he continued, unperturbed. She's always following me like I need her protection. Now she regretted teaching him Khimasar so well. Sage seized his uninjured arm without taking her eyes off Baneth. Enough, she snarled. Not another word, Nicholas.
See what I mean?
Nicholas said. She applied pressure to his wrist, and he whimpered, but finally shut up. Sage tried unsuccessfully to smile.
Do you have any younger brothers, Palandrit?
No, Benneth said, green eyes sparkling in amusement. Only a sister. Sage brought her hands back to the table and made herself relax.
Would you like to trade?
The king chuckled.
We can negotiate.
The Kazmuni king created a space for them in his tent, adding to the image of their treatment as guests, but it didn't escape Sage that it also meant they were heavily guarded. The moment they were alone, Sage grabbed the prince's elbow.
Never do that again, Nicholas. I have reasons for not telling them the truth, foremost being your safety.
I know. I just had an idea that explained everything.
His brow wrinkled in concern.
And you seemed to be struggling.
Sage rubbed her forehead.
You were lucky, she said. We were lucky.
You have to admit I pulled it off pretty well, though,
Nicholas said proudly. He had. The prince had saved both of them when her mind had failed. She sighed.
Just promise to consult me first next time, please. No surprises.
Nicholas nodded.
No surprises.
He sat down on the blankets and cushions that were apparently meant to be his bed, and Sage settled in the area designated for her. The Kazmuni king had a partitioned space on the other side of the tent.
What do you think of our new friends? She asked.
I like them, Nicholas said. Food's not bad either.
Trust you to appreciate that.
Will you sleep tonight?
Apparently he'd noticed how little she'd slept on their journey.
I'll try.
Good. You look tired.
Sage grimaced.
Which is a nice way of saying I look like shit.
He grinned as he lay down and drew a woven blanket up to his chest.
Yes.
Twerp.
She sank back on a cushion and turned away, unhooking a knife from her belt to keep handy. Alex's knife. Her inner vision swam with the image of his face, tense with anxiety, as he pressed it into her hand back at Tegan.
Remember what I taught you.
He'd loved her then, even as she rejected him out of anger and spite. His last actions showed he'd never faltered in that love. She would never have a chance to prove her betrayal had been out of love, to save him from the consequences of his actions. Sage squeezed her eyes shut as she gripped the dagger. Alex had died in protection of the prince. Now, the only thing that mattered was making sure it hadn't been in vain. Chapter 68. There was a fire in front of him, the light of the dancing flames penetrating his consciousness. Alex struggled to open eyelids that felt as rough as sand. His mouth was parched, but not as badly as he'd last remembered. He wore only a shirt and breeches from the feel of it, and both were wet, as was his hair. Alex rolled to his back and groaned with the pain of 100 cramping muscles. Hands appeared on either side of him, and Alex was too weak to resist as they raised him into a sitting position. Something was put to his lips, and water, warm but blessedly wet, trickled into his mouth. He swallowed with difficulty. The back of his throat felt melted shut. After a few sips, the water was pulled away and poured gently over his face, and Alex was finally able to open his eyes and see. It was night, and he lay in the shelter of a grove of trees. The faces of two men swam into view. Kazmuni. Apparently he wasn't dead. Yet. The waterskin was again brought to his lips, and he instinctively tried to grab it with his mouth and suck on it to bring the water faster, but they pulled it away.
Remoda,
one of the men admonished. Alex didn't understand the word, but took it to mean he was to drink slower. He nodded, and the water came back. After a few minutes, they took it away and laid him down, this time, against a soft pile of something.
More,
he begged them.
Please.
They shook their heads and left him, shortly replaced by a third Kazmuni.